Good morning, good afternoon, good evening.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Mundane Festival Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lambert. Today is Sunday, January 25th, 2015. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and on Podbean, the host site. If you like the show, rate and review it on iTunes and Stitcher. Give it a 5-star review. Tell everybody why you like it. And it'll be just a good, it's good for my self-esteem. It makes me feel good about myself, the life that I chose, the life that I stepped out of my everyday world and decided to bring you this podcast. So it makes me feel good, and for the tens of you that listen to this show, it warms my heart. So if you could do me a solid and give it a, you know, rate and review it and all that jazz, it would be a great thing for me. What else can you do? You can email the show at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com with questions, comments, concerns, things you want me to talk about, things that you want to recommend, or anything that you want to talk about. To be quite honest with you, I'm tired of getting people who say, I have a business proposition for you, and I know it's bullshit because I'm blind copied on it. And it's like, if you really wanted me, wouldn't you just email me directly and only me? Or are you just like, you know, shooting your wide net out there? Don't let me see that, you know, dude? You know what I'm saying? Or telling me that I have all this money, that you're going to give me if I give you my credit card information and social security number. I don't need that, okay? I really don't need that at this point in my life. You're only lying to me. I have a vulnerable heart. Don't do that to me. So just email me with other cool stuff that you want me to talk about. What else? You can like the show on Facebook. And you can follow it on Twitter at Mundane Festival. And you can follow me, your host, Chris Lambert, on Twitter at Chris Lambert. This is episode 103 of the podcast. I just got back from watching The Wedding Ringer and taking my dry cleaning shirts to be dry cleaned. Don't you wish you were living the life that I'm living right now? Just bawling out of control on Sunday afternoons. And don't you wish that you were me? My life is a movie. Right now, Miami's playing Chicago. Chicago is losing right now by 12 points. And every time I turn on SportsCenter, there's always somebody, people are always saying, the basketball analysts who sometimes seem that they know more than me and sometimes they don't, with their predictions saying Chicago's coming out of the East. I'm not 100% sure about that. I still think Cleveland might could do something. Let's say if Cleveland came out of the East, I would, you know what? No, if Cleveland came out of the East, I wouldn't be surprised. I'm pulling for either Cleveland or Washington, because Washington, I would say overall is my favorite team. Even though I want LeBron to win a championship for Cleveland, I want that to happen. That's the making of that could be one of the greatest sports stories of all time. Like a guy coming back vilified for leaving his hometown, winning some chips in another town, coming back to his town and bringing a title home. I think that would be amazing. It would be epic, as the homie Paul Verzi would say. So right after the Super Bowl, I think I'm going to really start focusing on basketball and spending my free time whenever I can start watching these games. Because I think, I don't know, Golden State is kind of showing me that they're for real. Klay Thompson had 52 points, and he had 37 points in one quarter, just killing it, making it hard. Like, now brown skin dudes have to step our game up, because light skin dudes are really taking over. I mean, you got Drake, you got Steph Curry on the same team as Klay Thompson, and they're killing it right now. We have to do better, brown skin guys or medium tone guys, darker complected guys. We have to do better in our fields of service, because light skin dudes are going to take it away from us and get all the women. And that's, you know, no, I'm not like that, but I fuck it. You know, Klay Thompson's playing well. I hope those guys are for real. I just keep wondering, can they beat the Spurs? Because the Spurs will always, they play possum for the year. They win if, you know, they sometimes they do really well. Sometimes they kind of, and then they're just killing everybody. And then they end up winning the whole thing. Don't be surprised if the Spurs win the whole thing again this year. Even though I'm rooting for other teams. I'm rooting for, I'm rooting for a Golden State and or Wizards-Cleveland final. That would be really stressful if, I don't know, I it would almost, that would, can't, you know, because I really love Steph Curry. I'd love to see, like I told you, love to see LeBron take one home. Love the Wizards, love John Wall. That would be a stressful finals, but it would be fun. I think it would be fun. So that's what I'm pulling for. I'm pulling for Golden State coming out of the West and either Cleveland or Washington to come out of the East. So that's where it's at. So but after the Super Bowls is this week, next week technically, because it's Sunday. In 7 days, the Super Bowl's coming up. And by gum, there's an opportunity for Russell Wilson, a black quarterback, to win the Super Bowl two seasons in a row. And I'm really excited about this. It was one hell of a game. Green Bay gave that game up. Everybody knows they gave it up. They stopped playing. They played to just finish the game and not to just... They played to hold on to the lead and not just win the game outright. And throughout the whole game, because Russell Wilson had a shitty game to like the last 5 minutes of the game, and he threw 4 interceptions. I don't think all those interceptions were his fault, though. But the announcers, the critics, people on Twitter, they were just, oh, you know, got to get rid of, oh, my God, I don't know if we're going to have to pay this guy money. I don't know if we're going to give him money, sign his new contract. I'm not sure about this. I'm unsure if this guy can lead the team. He's inaccurate. He's too short. He's just not getting it done. And they were talking about taking him out of the game and they had to walk all that stuff back. They had to walk all the hate, all of the quasi-racist things that they were saying about Russell Wilson. And they won. And it was great. It was awesome. If any of you follow me on Twitter, I sort of spazzed out. I sort of just really... really enjoyed myself, the hashtags, the Black Messiah, Black Quarterbacks. And actually, I did tweet this last week where I said Russell Wilson probably listened to Black Messiah before that game. And come to find out, I just started following him on Instagram. And he had a picture of some D'Angelo songs on his Instagram that he was actually playing. And I was like, yep. I screen capped and I was like, yeah, you guys, I told you that he listens to Black Messiah, and that's what he is. And that would be pretty epic. It'd be the first time that a black quarterback won 2 Super Bowls in a row. And I'm really excited. I don't know if I could go to a Super Bowl party and behave myself next week. if I got invited. I haven't gotten invited to anything yet. But if some friends decide to throw a party and I get invited, I might go. Or I might just stay home. It's usually better to just stay home sometimes. You know, I'm not really sweating it. But I'm very excited about this. And I remember like last week when they won, I called my parents and I asked, and Russell Wilson, when they were interviewing, he was crying and he, you know, he was very over, like just overjoyed and all the struggle that they went through to win that game. He was crying and it was really awesome. And some people were talking about his hair, like how his it's so fun. I forget what people said, but like his hair was laid down so pretty and all that stuff like that. It was just so funny, man. So I was glad. I called my parents. My mom answered. I was like, "Oh, are you crying?" And she's like, "No, you know, she's like, she got chills because he, you know, just of how epic it was." And you know, like my mom always tries to claim black people that do well in sports. Like it's like she's somehow related to them. Or she knows the Wilsons from Richmond. She probably does, but because he was born there. I believe he was born in Richmond, yeah. And, yeah, man, so that was great. And then the next day, you know everybody's breaking down the game and all the game footage, and they're talking about this should have happened and this blah, 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 talking about the game and everybody putting their 2 cents in. And around the middle of the day, on Monday, Martin Luther King Day, MLK Day, hashtag MLK Day, the Seattle Seahawks tweeted a picture. And they tweeted, "We shall overcome, hashtag MLK Day," and a picture of Russell Wilson in his moment when in tears, his hair curled up so pretty with the goatee, with the beard. And it was a quote from Martin Luther King that said, "Take the first step in faith. You don't have to see the whole staircase. Just take the first step." He was not Asian. He was black. Martin Luther King Jr. And people lost their ever-living shit because of this tweet and picture. Because of this twit pic, people lost their minds. They were just like, they were retweeting it. "How could you do this? How could you make something like this happen? They should fire the intern that tweeted this." And it's the Seahawks organization took down the tweet, but people kept going. People were writing blogs about it, think pieces, and they just went apeshit over this thing, and they just kept tweeting about it, and I wondered what the fuck they were doing that for. I don't get it, because people have said worse on MLK Day. People have sold mattresses, cell phones, cars, mattresses, kitchen appliances in the name of Martin Luther King. Have you, like, he who has not bought a Kenmore refrigerator on MLK Day, cast the first stone, you motherfuckers. Like, how do people get so mad about innocuous shit like this when there's so much other bullshit that you could be mad about? Like, you're really mad about an athlete, a sports team using this when other companies and organizations like Google, fucking AT&T, whoever, have used Martin Luther King and Gandhi to sell shit or to say that our company means something using Martin Luther King's image, you know? Like, I don't get it. It's a quote. It's an inspirational quote. And by gum, the Seahawks were getting the shit kicked out of them during that game. And they overcame adversity to win the fucking football game. Martin Luther King overcame a greater adversity, and with something, and it's adversity that we're still trying to essentially overcome, but he did have a lot of victories in his time as a civil rights leader, which meant that he overcame things and made progress in culture, in society, in within the human race, within this country. And he overcame it. Not saying that this victory, this NFC championship victory that the Seahawks had, is better than what Martin Luther King did. But that's what people use inspirational quotes to make them feel better, to get them through hardships. Do you know how many times I've listened to rappers rap about cocaine? The shit that the rappers that really sold drugs and killed people. Do you know how many times I've listened to that just to get ready for an audition to try to sell soap? Do you realize how many times every time I get in my car to go to a gig, the gigs that I talk about doing, I listen to music to make me feel something. It may not have anything to do with what I'm about to do on stage and tell my stories, but it makes me feel like I can do anything. It makes me feel like for the hour I'm on stage or when I'm doing a spot, when I'm getting ready for a show, it makes me feel like I can rise above my everyday boring life, the mundane festival of my life, guys, and elevate myself to a level where I can be better than I normally am. And football players do it, baseball, basketball, they do that shit. And if you have to use a Martin Luther King quote or a drug dealer's quote, who can put words together and that make metaphors and similes sound really fucking good and use parts of speech that go well over dope ass beat, then by gum, do it. I didn't see a fucking thing wrong with this. Like Steph Curry, I was watching a little, an E60, story on Steph Curry this morning on YouTube, and he writes Bible quotes on his shoes. He's just going out and playing basketball for 48 minutes. But that's what he does to get him motivated, to get him focused. People do that. Nobody died. Nobody died because the Seattle Seahawks decided to take a quote and put it with a picture of Russell Wilson and a quote from Martin Luther King Jr. Nobody died. Can you honestly say, as you fake activists that tweet from your laptops that you probably got on a President's Day sale or on some bullshit made up holiday that you got your fucking cell phone? Huh? Are you serious? Are you really upset about that? What are you really upset about? It's so dumb. It's so stupid. And I don't think they should have deleted the tweet. I really don't, you guys. That's where I'm going with it. They shouldn't have deleted it. And it was awesome. I don't know. I think a lot of people share the sentiment that, like, when black athletes do something, especially because the quarterback position is a position that's maybe one of the most difficult positions, the most respected position in sports, because you're running the team. You're the CEO, you're the manager, you're upper management in the organization, at least you're part of it. You're an extension of the coach who's part of management, and you're running the team. It's your team. And when you see pictures of Peyton Manning, you see him selling Papa John's and Nationwide and all this insurance and stuff like that. You see him doing all these promo things. but people get mad when RG3 does it. I bring him up a lot when he goes under so much scrutiny. When Russell Wilson, who led his team because he's the quarterback, if a white quarterback did what Russell Wilson did, oh my god, I can't believe what he did. Oh my god. If he won, if anybody else was in the position as Russell Wilson in, the same position that Russell Wilson was in, it would be different. They wouldn't be trying to talk about the defense the whole time. When he won that Super Bowl, who was throwing those passes? Who threw those touchdown passes? Is the Seattle Seahawks defense good? Of course they are. They're terrific. They have a really good defense. They're terrific. But you know, you can't tell me that Russell Wilson didn't help get him there. Did Marshawn Lynch play his ass off? Yes, he always does. But who usually gets the credit for it for most of the time? Most of the time, it's the quarterback. But they seem to feel uncomfortable. They just seem to feel uneasy when it's time to give a black quarterback some love. So I hope they win. I hope he gets acknowledged. And I hope the cheating Patriots, those cheaters, I hope they get what they deserve. All right? Are you really serious that we're talking about Inflategate for the next 2 weeks? Like, they've been talking about this for over a week now, and they've had these bullshit press conferences that have been made fun of. People SNL made fun of it. Everybody's talking about, they're not checking their balls. All these stupid ass jokes about balls and inflation of balls and handling the balls. When the Colts got the shit beat out of them, fair and square. But if this was another team, I don't think it would be an issue. But because the Patriots have a history of cheating, then people are going to talk about it. But they should have we should know other stories about the players that make up both teams, you know? It gets a little annoying. I'm not a fan of it. And it's all that people seem, that's all they seem to be talking about right now. Because all you have now, you have the Pro Bowl coming on tonight. And then you got basketball coming on. Basketball's on Sunday now. Got the Bulls the Bulls in the Heat, and then Cleveland's playing OKC. That should be fun. LeBron and Durant. I'll sign up to watch that. I'll be watching that, folks. That's going to be a good matchup. But it's so lame, man. And Brad Johnson was on, former quarterback, former Super Bowl winning quarterback of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Won the Super Bowl in 2003 when they beat the Raiders. He was made the rounds on the news, different shows and stuff. And he ended up on Dan Lebatard's show, one of my favorite sports radio broadcast. He was talking about how him and Rich Gannon broke footballs in. They got ball boys to break the footballs in. They both agreed on how the balls felt and everything like that. And they played a game. They had and it was a game. You know, nobody has ever really talked about that. It's something it's part of preparation that's just a part of the game. And nobody's ever really talked about it until now. And you got fucking Bill Nye, the science guy, responding to Bill Belichick's fucking press conference that he did yesterday. And he's like, I'm not going to talk about it anymore. I'm not going to talk about it. And then I just saw on Facebook, Bill Nye responds to Bill Belichick's press conference from yesterday. And Bill Nye says that he's lying. Belichick is lying. And I'm like, oh boy. Really? It's hard, man. When I was a kid, I used to like watching the pregame stuff. I mean, I still watch the pregame stuff, but as it relates to the Super Bowl, I just kind of tap out. I'll just watch a bunch of movies or something or do something else until the game comes on and just like watch it on delay. One time I did that. I cooked myself some chicken and had a good time, man. You already know who I'm hoping wins this. I'm hoping Russell Wilson gets this W. And I want to see what the narrative is after he wins it. I want to see what that is, man. I really do. And I'm not ashamed of rooting for black quarterbacks. It almost has the feeling of, like, I think when my parents were younger and when guys like Joe Louis, people would listen to those fights. Listen to boxing on the radio with their families and friends and get excited when you have these guys win these champions, win these belts, man. It's just like my parents, like now, they love Tiger Woods. And I love Tiger Woods too. I mean, you know, he had his faults, but whatever. Everybody does. Who doesn't? But they root for these black athletes that play in these sports that aren't predominantly black. And I think maybe that's where I get it from. But like my parents just take it to another level. I used to do a bit about it, how they think if Venus and Serena lose, then like things will go back to the way they used to. Things will go back to the way it used to be. Like we can't, like there's like separate but equal bullshit that you have to deal with. Like Jim Crow laws will come back into effect. And it's like, no, we can still eat at Outback together, mom and dad. We can still do that, and we don't have to sit at the back of the bus or sit on the bus if we don't want to, if we don't have to. Who wants to be on a bus anyway? But, yeah, man. So we'll see how it goes. I'm hoping if it's anticlimactic, in which it usually ends up being, I'm just hoping it's in the Seahawks commercial. In the Seahawks commercial, in the Seahawks favor, and then maybe there's some cool commercials, you know? What else? So let's talk about some, what else can we talk about? Anthony Mackie, actor extraordinaire. Anthony Mackie's been in the news because he said that the Oscar voters snubbed Selma because they're tired of racism. They're tired of racial movies. They're tired of race. All the while, Anthony Mackie's in a movie that's coming out this weekend called Black or White, and it's dealing with race, kind of. It's almost like, what is this movie about? Black or White is about a black grandmother played by Octavia Spencer. She's the grandmother of a biracial child whose mother dies, and she's trying to get custody from the white grandfather who's normally stayed with the kid. And it's almost, some people say it has a Losing Isaiah vibe to it, but it really doesn't. But there are there's drugs in it. It's, you know, the dad's on some kind of drugs. And I guess it's just a custody battle. It's got Kevin Costner is the grandfather. Octavia Spencer is the grandmother that's trying to get the kid from Kevin Costner. Bill Burr's in it, the great Bill Burr. So I'm probably going to see it on the strength of that. I would probably see it anyway. I like the director, Mike Binder. Directed this movie a few years ago called The Upside of Anger with Joan Allen and Kevin Costner, and Kerry Russell was in it. Delicate White Angel. She was in it, so I had to see that. The Americans is coming back soon. Sooner. Really soon. I think at the end of this month, so I'm excited about that. Anyway, it was a good movie, so I'm probably going to see that this weekend. I want to see that, and I want to see A Most Violent Year. So those are two that I'm looking forward to seeing anyway. Yeah, people are upset. The Griot, mad about Adam, where he did some interview, and he said something about, it's a video. He said one of his nephews wanted to get dreadlocks. And he said, I sat my nephew down and I showed him the first 48, and, the kids that were always getting arrested, they were black and they had dreadlocks. And I don't know how true that shit is, but if you're black, nobody gives a shit how your hair looks. I mean, they kind of do, but if they're going to pull you over, or you're going to get questioned and harassed regardless if you have dreads or a fro or a clean cut. I mean, people talk about, you know, the whole pull your pants up thing, where you could just look at old pictures and civil rights marches where kids would have cardigans on and slacks and nice dresses. They'd have their Sunday best on, and German shepherds would be like tearing the shit up. So that's bullshit. But a few years ago, and I think, you know what though? And I think some of the voters are. I did see a blurb, and I did not read the article, but I did see someone post, Entertainment Weekly or Entertainment Tonight posted an article or shared an article that said, Oscar voters said, you know, them telling us they're telling us we should have given Ava DuVernay a nomination because she's black. Well, I think that's racist. I mean, look what we did for 12 Years a Slave. So there you go. I mean, it's almost like they're saying, well, it's not almost like, they are saying, oh, well, we gave 12 Years a Slave Oscars, you know. So, I mean, come on, you guys. What are you talking about? What's going on here? You know, come on. So, it's like, why are you guys mad? It's like, you mad? You mad? Yeah, man. What else did I? There's more that I wanted to say about this. I think black people, they say the voters are mainly white men in their 60s, and I think black people are getting tired of the civil rights genre in movies. They're getting tired of these struggle movies, these black superhero maids and butlers. They're getting tired of that shit. And it's become, because it's become lucrative to do these movies now. These movies are making money, and that's the hot shit right now. And it's just like the high school movies. That was what, like, you had that Not Another Teen movie that made a parody of all of them. And I think it kind of started with, I want to say 96, when 95, 96, whenever Clueless came out. And because that movie was successful, they made other movies that were similar, like, I don't know, like 10 Things I Hate About You, which was a good one. That was an example of a really good one. It was steeped in Shakespeare. And it's the same thing. And that genre sort of petered out. You're not seeing, well, you're still seeing them. I did see a trailer of a horror movie when I was watching The Wedding Ringer. And I'll talk about that later on. There was a trailer for that, a movie called Unfriended. That was a bit of a horror movie / maybe rape movie. Reminds me of that Steubenville, Ohio case. Those football players. It was kind of like, I was like, was this taken from that? Like, when I was watching it, I was like, it looks interesting. I don't know if that movie comes out in a dead period where, if I have to kill some time, I'm probably gonna go see that shit. And yeah, man. So it's just like anything else. And like I said, black people are getting tired of that shit too. And I think they just want to see themselves on screen, and they want to see black people in present day going through complex, complicated situations, navigating through those, and either and seeing how they come out on the other side. I mean, I think everybody wants to see a version of themselves on screen. Me as a fan, I try to watch everything because I really enjoy it. But at the same time, when I was a kid, when I was growing up, I was inspired by the Spike Lee movies. I was looking at I like Do the Right Thing, Bamboozled, and all the Malcolm X, and you have your other movies. You have your Love Jones, and you have Love and Basketball. You have all these, you know, John Singleton movies, Hood movies, all of that. Getting inspired and enjoying seeing yourself on screen. People that look like you and share some of the same experiences, like movies like The Wood, Best Man, all that. That's why the Best Man holiday was so refreshing for a lot of black people. And it was good. And it wasn't just, we don't have to be reminded that we were slaves every fucking year. You know, it's getting really annoying. And people are tired of it. It's not just white people. But when somebody like Anthony Mackie steps out and says that, then he comes under ridicule. When maybe 3 or 4 years ago, he came out on the Tavis Smiley show and he was saying how black filmmakers are lazy. Black Hollywood's lazy. They want stuff to just be given to them and they should make their own movies and not be worried about profiting on the front end all the time. I mean, he brought up times where he did movies for 25 and 35 bucks a day. You can look at, if you Google Anthony Mackie, Tavis Smiley, you may or may not agree with it. But he raises some interesting points. He says, you know, Oprah's got a studio. Oprah's got her own network. What is she doing? Well, she made The Butler and she helped get Selma made. But those are two civil rights / struggle movies. Good ones, but struggle movies nonetheless. Black struggle movies. Yeah. Hashtag black struggle movies. And he mentioned he did a film like Half Nelson for 25, 35 bucks a day. Cause he believed in the project and he bet on himself and he believed in himself and he's had a wide variety of films that he's done. You know, he's been the black guy in the movie. He's been done the indie thing. He's played a gay dude. He's played a anti-magical Negro. He's played superheroes. So he's a, and I like Anthony Mackie. I've always liked him mainly because he went to Juilliard. He got training and he takes his craft seriously. Some people might think he's a douche for saying what he says. I always feel like black Twitter, black people, you know, we always say that we're not a monolith, but we put so much on our celebrities or people that are in the forefront, people, the noteworthy black people. We give them a hard time when they say something that they don't like, when we don't like. And I wonder I don't know how to feel about that. Cause it's like, oh, we're not a monolith, but you better say the shit that we want you to say, or we're not going to fuck with you anymore. Or we're not going to support what you do. And that's kind of dangerous too. So it's just sort of a fine line. I don't know. It's a bit of a paradox to me. To try to unpack that right now, you know, it's a lot to unpack, but maybe it isn't, you guys. I don't know. I just know as a fan, I like seeing like black people and minorities in different aspects, you know, I don't like to see them just in these subservient, secondhand roles, you know? And so, I mean, that's how I feel about it. I just remember doing theater in Chicago, how I did some shows that were dealing with black folks in the present day and it was cool. But then there are also like the big ones, the things that people go see all the time Every February, somebody's doing an August Wilson play, and every black actor in the city is auditioning for that August Wilson play, because it's gonna, you know, the play is gonna be dope, and Chicago has so much great talent in it, and it's like, that's the play that white people are gonna go see, and they're gonna feel some kind of way about it and have some type of catharsis and just be, oh my god, this was so moving, but this was in the past, and when I walk out of here, those people aren't, it's not going to be like that when I walk out of here, but I'm still going to fear for my life and clutch my purse when I see a black person that walks by me after the movie or after the play, and I'm going to clutch my wallet or my purse as a black person walks by me, and he's probably not going to really hurt him. He's probably just trying to go to Chipotle, take it home, and watch some Netflix. He's not going to hurt you. He's just trying to live his life, you know? He's just maybe going to get some Chipotle, go to Redbox, and watch a movie and enjoy himself. You know, maybe that's what he's trying to do. But you're putting your prejudices on him. And this one black person is a bad guy to you. So you're afraid. I don't know, but it's an interesting thing to talk about. I have to get somebody on here to talk about that with, and I, you know, it is what it is. I did do some comedy this week, you guys. I had a good time. I did a show at the Bushwick Public House in Brooklyn. Bushwick is always a place where it seems really seedy, even though gentrification is happening. But it just still seems like there's a little danger abound, or just around the corner. It seems a little weird. Hassan Whiteside just dunked on Pau Gasol. But it was nice. I had a good time. Like the bar, it's like a nice bar upstairs, and then you go, the show was downstairs, and it's in this basement. And they have all these different types of chairs and a little like, it looks like you're in it's kind of a den, a downstairs den, and there's a girl selling beer and liquor back there, and it ended up being a really fun show. There was one comic, this was one of the few shows that I've been on that's had an intermission. The first, they recently, I guess maybe within the last couple of years, Sunday nights at the Knitting Factory, they have intermissions where you get a couple comics. It's always packed, and there's an intermission, and they do the rest of the show. This one, they did like three comics, and the last comic in that bunch just said some, like, I don't know, maybe one of the last comics said some really racist shit about Mexican people that wasn't funny, and it was just kind of like, why are you shitting? And it's not like, oh, why are you punching down? You're supposed to punch up. I don't believe in that shit. But it's just like, you really have an issue with Mexicans. This shit isn't funny. What the fuck is going on? And you talk about whatever the fuck you want to talk about, but make the shit funny. But this dude, yeah, he just went in on Mexican people. And then Jared Logan, really funny dude, gets up there and kind of shits on the dude's jokes. That dude walked quite a few people, and I came on after the intermission, but Jared like kind of, you know, shut that dude's bullshit down, and it was pretty funny. And then there was still people in the room, but after that a lot of people had left, and I got to work out and work on a few new bits, and it was good. It was worth the experience. I got home at 12 o'clock and had to get up at 4. That wasn't as that fun the next day, but either way, it was all good. And Friday, I opened for Amanda Seals, who's a comedian, actress, host, DJ, painter extraordinaire. She does a little bit of everything, and she's really cool. I had never met her before, and I opened for her at the Bolton Center for the Performing Arts in Bayshore, New York. So I picked her up after I got off work, and we drove up there to Long Island. And it was fun. I did about 15 minutes in front of her. I brought her up, and she has this interactive comedy show called It's Complicated, where she talks about relationships and stuff like that. She has different characters, and she did. I'm not going to give anything away, but she brought me on stage and an impromptu thing. She said, "Oh, I'm going to bring you up on the show. You can come do the show." I was like, "All right." So she asked me some questions and had some interactions with the audience, and it was really fun. It ended up being a really good show. I definitely want to get her on the podcast at some point, and she said she was cool with it. But we'll see what happens. Well, I'm not going to make any promises to you, but I'm hoping that that will happen. And if it does, it'll be a good time because she's good people. And I was supposed to do a show last night in Westminster, Maryland at an Elks Lodge, but the weather was so horrible. I wasn't going to go down. I just didn't want to risk driving down there and get into some shit, man. But you know, it just wasn't worth it. I hated that I missed the show, but there will be others, Lord willing. Let's talk about some movies. I got quite a few movies to talk about. This week I saw American Sniper, and American Sniper had a lot of controversy surrounding it. People were, "Oh my God, don't see this movie." Chris Kyle, the guy that the movie was about. Let's just read the synopsis. A little bit of the wiki blurb. Most of you know about this movie, but here we go. American Sniper is a 2014 American biographical war drama directed by Clint Eastwood and written by Jason Hall. It is based on Chris Kyle's autobiography, American Sniper, the autobiography of the most lethal sniper in U.S. military history, with 255 kills, 160 of which were officially confirmed by the Department of Defense. Kyle is the deadliest marksman in U.S. military history. His widow, Taya Renee Kyle, was heavily involved with the making of the film. The film stars Bradley Cooper and Sienna Miller, with Luke Grimes, Kyle Gallner, Seth, okay, and all these people in supporting roles. So this movie went in wide release, last weekend, because it really wasn't playing that much. When I was down in South Carolina, it wasn't there. If it was, I'd have been all over it. But it was not. I really like this movie. This was essentially a superhero movie. And it made Chris Kyle look like a superhero. I mean, that's pretty much what it was. And there's the controversy around it was that Chris Kyle, the guy who the movie was about, was basically this sociopath who lied about a lot of shit. There was a story where he talked about knocking out Jesse the Body Ventura, who was a Navy SEAL, talked about knocking him out at a bar. If that wasn't true, and Jesse Ventura, former pro wrestler, also former governor of Minnesota, took him to court, and it's a big controversy about that. People were upset about him for going after this quote unquote American hero. And he talked about, and then somewhere in the book where he talks about killing some looters or some evil doers during Hurricane Katrina. It was just kind of weird, and it just seemed like this guy wasn't, he just wasn't what the movie or the book portrayed him to be. So basically, he was a liar, but he did kill 255 people, and 160 of them were confirmed. And it made this guy look like a superhero. And in most autobiographical movies, most biopics, they make the guy kind of, they make him kind of like he was an angel. And not necessarily an angel, but they make him larger than life. You know, it happens in a lot of movies. It happens in 42, the Babe Ruth movie, fuck anybody. This epic thing. But the movie, if you just take the movie for what it was, it's like, all right, this is a good movie. Clint Eastwood's been making movies for 50, 60 plus years. However long this dude's been making movies, he's been making them a long time. And even if you didn't like Jersey Boys, which I didn't see, the man has made some good ass movies. This man made some good movies, young. And you gotta respect him for that. American Sniper's a good movie. Like, there's certain emotional beats that this movie has that, you know, most movies have. You know, most of the good ones have. It tugs at your heartstrings. It makes you feel for this guy. There were some parts that reminded me of Metal Gear. Like, there was this one guy, an evil sniper. And I forget what the fuck they called him. But that motherfucker, like, was like a villain, man. He was a real cold-blooded villain. Killed some of his people. And it was pretty fucking intense. And there were some intense scenes in this movie. And I don't know. You know, people say, oh, they made the Islamic or the Saudi or whoever the people look like bad guys. Not all of them were bad guys. All of them weren't bad. They called them, you know, called them savages and shit like that. Well, some of them were savages. If you're trying to get information from a non-insurgent, or just a regular civilian, a regular citizen of that country, and you're gonna drill a hole the guy's kid's head, you're a fucking savage. You're a savage. Oh, that's some kid in the apartment below me yelling. I don't know if you guys heard that or not, but this is one of those life is happening around. If I was yelling like that, I'd probably get a knock on my door and I'd get in trouble. But those people are savages. Not all of them. The people that are killing their own people, those people are savages. I don't know what the fuck people think happens when war happens. I don't know what people think happens when soldiers go to war. They fight. They kill. And it's not a game, homie. It's not a game. It's not fucking Call of Duty. Like, I was at the mall today, walking in the mall. I walk past GameStop, and there's Call of Duty 47. There's so many Call of Duty games, and or Black Ops or whatever the fuck these games are. And I'm not blaming that on the video games, but we live in a violent society. We live in a violent country. A country that was stolen away from violence, stolen away by violence, rather. People committing violent acts every day. Other countries were founded on violence in the world. You know, motherfuckers is violent, and you can't just. This movie comes out. It's a war movie. That's what it is. And you're like, oh my God, I can't believe what they're calling these people. What the fuck do you think they're going to call them? Angels? Oh, I have to kill these angels today. No, you're going to say bad shit when you fight. You're going to say bad things about the people that are trying to take your life and you're trying to take theirs. I mean, that's what this is all about. And I guess now it's more it's more prevalent because people have the internet, but I just don't see where all the the vitriol for this movie is. I see where it's coming from, but it's kind of like, really, you're mad about this now when the video game industry's made billions of dollars selling these Call of Duty games. It's just like, I mean, I don't play them. It's just, it's not my thing. But I don't know. It's really weird, dude. I don't know. I think Bradley Cooper, if anybody's going to take the Oscar from Michael Keaton this year, it could be Bradley Cooper. After I saw this movie, I thought, okay, it's between Michael Keaton and Eddie Redmayne. Benedict Cumberbatch is not winning for Imitation Game. I didn't see that movie. I saw the trailer all those times. It's something I'll eventually see, but I know David Oyelowo probably could have got the nom over that dude. Every movie was based on a historical person, based on at least an actual person, with the exception of Michael Keaton's character in Birdman. Sorry, guys. I had to pause that. There was some Indian dudes buzzing on my door, like a gang, like four or five of them. I don't know why they were buzzing my door. I think it was a mistake because I don't know those people. And I have the kind of neighbors, only one neighbor that I really talk to, which is an older black guy. And these other people don't talk. They don't even look at you. They act like you don't exist. So I don't know those fucking dudes, and I'm not answering the door for them. So where was I? American Sniper. It's a good movie. Bradley Cooper definitely can win. I don't know, but Eddie, see, it's tough because Eddie Redmayne had the, he has the my left foot thing going for him. And, I don't know. It's between those three. So we'll see what happens. But American Sniper, good movie, good performance by Bradley Cooper. And people need to get over themselves because this is not going to be the first or last movie that glorifies the military, the American military, or people that serve in the movie and people that serve in the armed forces. So get over yourselves. Like I told you before, I just got back from seeing The Wedding Ringer with Kevin Hart and Josh Gad. I did the Facebook check-in that I was at the movie seeing Wedding Ringer, and I got my cousin. What did my cousin say? Let's see if somebody might have. Let me see here. Excuse me. So my cousin says, saw the movie yesterday. Kevin Hart stole my money. I write back, you just don't have the heart, in all caps, to enjoy this movie. A guy that I did a play with one time. Guy that I was in a shitty play with once says he's done in a year. I was like, Jesus Christ. And then my cousin said, I paid to see his last two movies. Never again. Bring back Chris Tucker so he can come into your movie and teach white people how to dance. Yeah, like he did in fucking Silver Linings Playbook. No, thank you. You know, I just think it was all right. I enjoyed The Wedding Ringer. It was funny. I laughed. And it had a little heart to it. It's Kevin Hart, if you will, you guys. See what I did there? I enjoyed it. They showed damn near everything in the movie. I think they cut a lot. They actually, when I think about it, they cut a lot out. And I think some of it they've just made for the trailer, but I have no clue. But I really enjoyed it. It was worth my $8. I actually paid $8. I paid $8.01 to this movie. And it was kind of predictable. You kind of see where things were going, but it was just a fun January movie. If you got time to kill, try not to pay $16 for the fucking thing. But if you got time to kill, go see it. It's good. Nothing else is out right now, unless you want to see, catch up on your Oscar movies that you haven't seen, stuff that got nominated, and if you want to see that. But as far as newer stuff, it's the movie to see right now, I think. Even though I think American Sniper was killing. It made so much money. Damn, Hassan Whiteside is killed. 24 minutes, 14 points, 13 rebounds, 12 blocks. He's got a triple-double. He had a triple-double. Jesus Christ. This kid's been like a journeyman. And they've been talking him up on the Lebertard show, obviously because he's playing down there in Miami. But dude's been killing it. I wonder what those Indian dudes were knocking. I think they thought I was somebody else. Because I don't know those dudes. And my car is not in their way or anything. So, anyway. Yeah, man. I like The Wedding Ringer. And I think you should check it out. Kevin Hart actually showed some more. He's doing the Kevin Hart thing. But he still got range. Like, he showed some range in it. There was a couple emotional moments there, and it was kind of like, all right, man. Like, I think Kevin Hart, I like Kevin Hart, man. He's a likable dude. I don't know what some people are expecting when they go see these movies. I mean, maybe it's because my expectations were kind of low, or I'd just seen enough movies to know what I was getting into. So maybe that's why I wasn't like, what the fuck? He took my money. But then my cousin never liked shit. And then that other dude's an actor that I'm sure he's doing his thing, you know. But, you know, some people feel like they should have what other people have. There's some people like that. I don't know. But it's just like, he's going to be fucking done. Like, Jesus Christ. Is it that bad? Wow. What else? Oh, one more movie. I forgot to talk about this movie last week. I saw it and I was just enamored with it. This movie called Chef. Jon Favreau wrote and directed this movie. It came out last year. Carl the Haitian on Twitter recommended this movie to me. I don't know why it took me so long to see it. It might have been one of those in between movies where it wasn't playing in certain places and then I just didn't get around to see it. But about 2 weeks ago, I was at the grocery store and I was going to Redbox and I saw this. I was like, oh, I haven't seen Chef. I'll rent it. And then it had a button on there that said buy next to rent. And I clicked on the buy button to see how much it was. It was $5. $5 on Blu-ray. So I was like, yo, I'll cop it. You know, I'll get it. You know, put a couple more bucks to it. You own it. So I bought it and I really enjoyed it, man. Like, this Chef is the greatest white man changing his life by buying a food truck movie. It's the greatest white man changing his life for the better by buying a food truck. It's the best movie of that genre. And Jon Favreau plays this chef in the suburbs of L.A. I think it's like Brentwood. And he's the chef of this restaurant. He's been there for a while. And he's making food that people like. And it's safe. Everybody likes it. And then there's this food blogger that comes in that comes to review the food. The owner's like, oh, you're going to stick to the script. You're just going to do what we've been doing. He didn't want to. And he does that. The blogger eviscerates him on his blog. And then things start happening. And Jon Favreau's character's estranged from his ex-wife and has like a not that great of a relationship with his young son. That's probably like, I think about 9 or 10 years old. And then there's a journey, and that's all I'm going to say about it. There's a journey, and you kind of know where the journey's going to end up, but it's a good journey to be on and just see how everything happens. I like how it's shot. I have the Blu-ray. There's like this, and then for a fat person, like just to see food get made like that, and just to see the process of how the food's made, it's really good. Like there's a scene where Jon Favreau's character's making a cheese sandwich for his son, and it's just as good as watching a car chase. And it's just as good, and it's I like it a lot, and I highly recommend it. And I don't know why I waited so long to see this movie. One other thing, we'll talk about some music a little bit. Lupe Fiasco came out with this album called, I think it's called Setso in Youth, or T-E-T-S-U-O. And I listened to this Wednesday just on the drive from Westchester to Brooklyn when I was doing that show. It's a good album. It sounds really good. The raps are good. I just haven't unpacked the album for what it is. So it's probably going to take me a long time to really just give this album a lot of listens. But I enjoyed it. It's really good. He's got this one song. What's the name of this song? It's like 8 minutes long. Song called it's a song called Mural, and he's rapping for 8 minutes. I think somebody said on Twitter 300 bars, and he's just rapping his ass off for like 8 minutes, almost 9 minutes. And I don't know what the fuck he's talking about throughout most of them, but it is good. Like I said, like it's just something I have to revisit, but it's a good album. I like it, and I want to listen to it more. And if I get more, after I get more immersed in it, I'll talk about it again. Same thing like with the Alice Smith album, She, that I was talking about last week. I kind of just said, oh, Alice Smith's got an album. It's good. I think I said that like sometime last year. And I was just like, oh, shit. Now it just kind of hit me over the head where it was like, oh, this is really good. Yeah, guys. So, check out Setso in Youth by Lupe Fiasco. So that's the end of the show, you guys. I can give you some plugs. How about I do that? How about I give you some plugs? And I thought that I had this queued up, but I didn't. So I'm going to soft shoe until my dates come up. I know for a fact that this Friday I will be at the Laughing Devil Comedy Club in Long Island City, hosting the 8 and 10 p.m. shows. I'll be there on Friday, the 30th. February 7th, I'll be at Gotham Comedy Club in New York City at 10:30 p.m. Big show, February 13th, Friday the 13th, I'll be at the Whitney Center for the Arts, headlining in Pittsfield, Massachusetts, as part of the 10x10 Upstreet Arts Festival, hosted by Tom Attila Lewis. That's going to be a good time. I'm really excited about that. I will be on the 18th. I'll be at this bar called 2A in New York City, East Village, at 8 p.m. I'll be on the February 27th. I'll be at the Creek in the Cave in Long Island City at 8 p.m. Some March dates. I'll be at Passenger Bar in Brooklyn, New York at 9 o'clock p.m. Union Hall in Brooklyn at 7:30 p.m. And March 25th, I'll be at Lucy's Lounge in Brooklyn, New York at 8 o'clock p.m. So that's the end of the show. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And I'll talk to you next week. Peace.